victim or individuals who are observing a situation identifying. Am I wrong? Is that not correct?
Chairman.
Oh, I'm fine. So I think it gives them a sort of the key to the bank, but then they have to get independent verification.
That's what I was after.
I think the word you're looking for is independent verification. Yes, right. That's the person. Yes, that's the car. Yes, right. That's the whatever.
Yeah, well, independent verification, that's what I meant.
Although, if I might add, you never need probable cause just to knock on a door.
Door.
Yeah, you can do that anytime you want.
No, all right. I do have two technical questions.
Chairman Clark.
Major Info.
Yes, Chairman Clark. What it is it would just expand a system that would already be in place, in that it would obtain additional information that would be helpful in investigative leads, and it would not establish probable cause.
Okay, well, I guess what I need to know, either from Representative Mannix or Major Info, what's the proposal? I mean, are you working on a motion?
I'm at the point where I would say that I would just as soon propose that the state police be in charge of the of the registration process, and that they pick up on from the point of conviction, and that it be used in conjunction with the LEDS system. I'm tracking the Major Renfro's
Council
comments.
Has a comment on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, let me just walk you through the bill for a second, and I think that there's really two pieces to this. Section 2, subsection 1, talks about discharge, parole, or probation, and at that point, the language in line 23 talks about the official in charge of supervising the person shall obtain the address where the person shall reside and enter that into the LEDS system. That is the current system. The committee is going to have to decide if they want to continue that. One of the issues that Major Renfro has raised was whether or not the description of the offense in line 25 is sufficient, or whether or not he wants to expand upon that. The second time that the issue has raised, however, is in line 29 on page 1, where when the person moves, at that point they have an obligation to notify the parole officer, probation officer, which is closest. And so it's really a two-step process. Who do you want them who gets the initial report when the person is being released, and then every time the person subsequently moves, who do you want them? And the bill does handle them separately, and I just want the committee to be clear about that.
My response is to return to the simple concept, and that would require further changes in the current law to say, at point of conviction, this information is provided, it's put into the law enforcement data system, not when they're discharged, paroled, or released.
But
at the point of conviction, it's put in there that the maintenance of that information, they're going to be under supervision from the parole or probation officer.
Counsel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, my understanding that information is already, it's already inputted into the LEDS system. Am I not correct?
Not the expanded registration stuff that Major Renfro is talking about. Sorry about that.
Yes, basically, there is information on sex offenders in LEDS.
As soon as the conviction is entered.
Yes, and what I'm talking about is an expansion of that system in a separate computer database.
Okay.
So what do we need to do that?
To do that, Representative Clark, would be to, first of all, establish a separate means for a computer database, which is basically computer equipment, perhaps one person at its staff. And
I'm seeing dollar signs.
No, but that's the extent of it. One person, basic computer equipment, perhaps $5,000 for that, and then that would be the establishment of such a system.
Counsel, is there no fiscal impact statement or no fiscal impact on this bill right now?
I don't believe so. I mean, there is only the only fiscal is the attached to creating a crime of failing to register.
Okay, but all right, and either counsel or Representative Mason, our experienced Ways and Means member, if you were to do in this bill what Major Renfro is suggesting, and let's say that it got $25,000 fiscal impact by the time you added one person and a computer, say 30, no, keep going, 50.
Keep going.
All right, whatever. At what point do we end up sending it down to Ways and Means Council?
Well,
I can tell you what I was told.
You'd probably want to send down, with all due respect and compliment to Major Renfro, what he's talking about is very appropriate, but I think he's beyond the scope of the bill. And with all due respect, there's no such thing as a $5,000 computer anymore, and there's no such thing as a $25,000 warm body. His people run about $100,000 a pop. At least that was the rule of thumb I always used down in Ways and Means, was that a state police, you know, for every state policeman, it was like $100,000. Now, you might say it wouldn't be a state policeman, but I would just say, even though he's got some good ideas, to just to keep
well,
a relatively clean bill.
All right. Does it help? I appreciate that those comments, Representative Mason. Major Info, does it help you at all in what Representative Mannix is suggesting, if in line 25 where it says description of the offense, if we just simply add some more language there in terms of what shall be in the LEADS, profile of the crime, and so on and so forth? Does that help?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it would.
Okay. I'm going to suggest that you work with Representative Mannix in coming up with some language that would do that, short of creating this new computer system. And then I'm also going to suggest that you and Representative Mannix and me work to put together a separate bill, and I will approach the High Chair about and the Speaker about having it introduced as a committee bill at some point to see if we can't revisit the issue of a separate computer system.
One final thing, Mr. Chair. The one thing that was not mentioned, that was mentioned during the interim, that is relevant here vis-a-vis computer databases, and that's the DNA database, which you talk about effective law enforcement in this area. Then you're really getting down to the effective, because you want an effective database. Once you get DNA in there, you're absolutely right. Big price tag on it.
Okay, yeah. To be real clear, and I appreciate those comments, Representative Mason, what we want to do is I want to make sure that we're able to move this bill today. And I'm afraid that if we load it down with fiscal impact, that it's, first of all, we're not going to have a chance to put the language together, and secondly, it's going to put a dollar sign on the front of it, and I'm not sure we want to do that. So I would rather tackle the issue of the computer system in a separate bill and make this bill ready to fly. And to that end, we're going to break at 4 o'clock for about 10 minutes. And I'm going to suggest that Representative Mannix and Major Renfro look at possibly some language to put in line 25.
Chair, can I ask a question?
Representative Sanceri.
It's a different subject on the same bill. The provisions of this measure sunset after 8 years, and my question is, if this does in fact sunset is not continued by the legislature at that time, what happens to those people who have been sentenced to lifetime registration in those 8 years?
Yet, Council.
Pardon?
Better yet, why does it sunset?
Well, I think the testimony from Mr. Fotz and Ms. Hoyt when they first came up was that because basically we don't know how to treat sex offenders yet, we don't know whether registration is going to work, so let's revisit this thing in 8 years and see if it's working. That was the basic premise, if I recall, that this is kind of a sociological, criminological experiment, and let's see where we are in 8 years.
Then what happens to those people who have been sentenced between passage of this bill and the 8-year sunset? After it goes away, do they remain required register, or are they released from that requirement?
They're off the hook. They're off the hook at that point.
They're off the hook.
You might want to destroy the registry, though.
Yeah, we're going to come. I want to revisit Section 6, the sunset, along with the relief from the duty to register. When we get to that point. All right, let's start working our way through the bill section by section and see what we can do. Section 1, I think it's important, and Council, correct me if I'm wrong, if I read the memo from Ms. Grimm correctly, it might be important under the Oregon Constitution that we make clear here that the legislative intent is to prevent future sex offenses against children, and that the registry is not based on some sort of notion of retribution, but that it's an attempt to prevent future crimes against children.
That's correct. That's not children. Even though they're adding on, I think the legislative intent of the 89 legislation would indicate that the intent was to prevent future activity. This then expands that into not only crimes against adults, but also crimes against children.
Do we need to? Do we need to have a statement of purpose in the front side of the statute, which I would be perfectly comfortable with? If it's not necessary, then let's not do it. But if,
Mr. Chair, members,
it seems to me it's one thing from a legal standpoint to say that you're going to require people to register for 5 years. It is another thing. It's a step further to say that you're going to require them to register for life. And I just want to ask the question of whether a statement of purpose might be helpful.
So
In the Washington statute, where you have to register for life if you are committed, if you commit a Class A felony, there is a purpose section in there, and one of the criteria for being granted relief is that the purposes of the act are no longer satisfied. You no longer need to satisfy them. You are no longer a threat to society, kind of thing. So I think that for your comfort level, and I think to ensure that, in fact, that's not why it's not being done, it probably isn't a good idea.
All right. Well, then is there objection to the idea of having a purpose section in this statute? That it would basically state that the purpose of the statute is to aid law enforcement in preventing future sex offenses against children.
And adults.
Any objection to that conceptually?
Future offenses.
That the purpose of the statute would be to aid law enforcement in preventing future sex offenses against children and adults. That would be in the purpose section of the statute. I don't want to challenge, based on the Oregon constitutional provision that says that the criminal justice system is based on rehabilitation and not on vindictive justice.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Edmondson.
Well, I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I would fully support it, because that is, as I recall the testimony of Mr. Fotz, the purpose behind this is not to be an additional punishment. And, however, insofar as any court might look at it that way, and we can't, of course, restrict how a court can look at it, I think that this does meet the Eighth Amendment requirements, that we are dealing with pretty serious offenses here, and it's certainly not an onerous restriction on them.
And Article 1 of the Oregon Constitution as well. Representative Mason, did you have a comment?
Well, just adults and children covers everyone.
Okay.
I just think it's out of
both. Well, counsel is going to obviously draft the language for us. We've got a conceptual amendment going here. All right. Then moving on into Section 1.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sanseri.
I would like to see us add to that compelling prostitution. There's
to add to what? I'm sorry.
I would like to add to the section.
I see. Okay.
List of sex crimes.
On number 10, there, after paying for viewing a child's sexually explicit conduct, compelling prostitution.
Thank you, Representative Terry. That sounds like an excellent suggestion, Council.
I was going to say it's on the statute of limitations list that the committee dealt with last week, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have that in front of me, but I believe
okay.
It is.
Mr. Fotz, Ms. Hoyt, is that a? Do you have any problems with that?
I'm trying to figure out what kind of.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sanseri. Representative Sanseri has moved that we add to Section 1 the crime of compelling prostitution. Is there any discussion of that? Any objection to that? Okay, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Point of inquiry. I don't have the bill folder with me, but are there any other crimes listed in the statute of limitations bill that are not listed here?
I'd have to check. I don't know offhand.
It seems to me that we
perhaps
ought to be fully consistent with the listing of crimes that we thought were sufficient to warrant special attention of the statute of limitations, and I'd move a conceptual amendment.
Let's do this. Before you do that, if I can, let's wait and find out what we're dealing with. When we take the break, I'll ask counsel to get the statute of limitations bill so we know specifically what we're looking at.
All right. Thank you.
Let me make an announcement. It looks to me like that we will not get to House Bill 2407 today. I'm sorry, 2413. We lose 5 members of the committee at 4:30 today for a Republican caucus. And since we're right in the middle of 2407, I want to push on through that. Representative Mannix.
Without precluding a lot of discussion on that bill, having worked over that folder, it looks like a pretty quick action bill, but maybe I'm wrong, as if there's some kind of...
Okay, sir, we'll do. I appreciate the suggestion. After the break, we'll come back. We're going to break at 4 o'clock. We'll come back, and the first thing we'll do is see what the committee preference is on 2413, if we can move that in a fairly short order, then we will. If not, then we'll move out of work session on that and pick up again on 2407. All right. Further discussion about Section 1 of the bill. I want to work through this kind of section by section. We have a conceptual amendment to add a purpose section. We have a conceptual amendment to... We have a specific amendment to add compelling prostitution. And Representative Mannix has suggested that whatever else is in the statute of limitations bill we might want to include in here. We're going to look at that after the break. Representative Mason.
Discussion for the record. I think that we need to reference some of these offenses back to the ability to get off the registration, and at least the court would look upon this as being overly onerous. Let's look at this bill as a whole and realize that, and it's going to be very, very hard to say this, that perhaps some of these offenses in a certain degree, sex abuse in one of the lower degrees, might not merit that type of lifetime registration, but the remedy there and the integral remedy and the is the court getting you off. So I think we should always view that.
Okay. So you're saying you, to the extent that the bill would face any kind of challenge,
exactly.
That the relief from registration provision may be a safeguard. I think is an excellent point. Counsel,
let me just add something to I don't know if I can confirm that, but if you have attempted sexual abuse in the second degree, you're talking about a Class B misdemeanor, which is 6 months, 6 months in prison. Am I right?
Yeah.
On a Class B misdemeanor. So if the committee is going to consider lifetime registration for a Class B misdemeanor,
which is something quite different than incest with a child victim.
Yeah.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Representative Mannix.
But I think the saving grace, as Representative Mason has pointed out, is having a clause that allows anyone to apply to court for excuse from the registration provision that takes care of a problem they have in California, which is occasionally a lot of litigation, is whether this sentence was onerous because the person will therefore have to have a lifetime registration. And the answer is, hey, you got a case to make? File a petition for a relief.
Right.
And convince a judge.
That's very good.
Good. All right. Is there any objection to that direction? Representative Mason.
No, go ahead, and then I want
to. All right. Moving into Section 2, then. Counsel, you flagged a couple of issues for
it. Sure,
Representative Mason.
I don't want to throw a monkey wrench into this. How does this relate vis-a-vis expungement?
These are non-expungible.
Yeah,
no, I haven't compared the list.
Some of them are.
We passed the statute last session, I think, that one of the provisions of which stated that certain sex offenses were not expungible.
Were not, and I have not. I can do that.
We'll ask counsel
to
check that.
Yeah, I don't want to pull a monkey
wrench. Okay. All right.
I didn't want to get a bizarre situation where your offense had been expunged.
But you still have to register.
Yeah, but you're... Yeah.
Right.
I think they could combine the proceedings and use our...
that might be the way to do it. Indeed, if a court finds you're expungible, you should automatically find that you're off the registration list. I don't know, but it would seem to me that
counsel can probably check that out fairly quickly.
Do you have a number?
Yes.
I've got the list.
Great.
It's 4.
Nice having
19,
lawyers on the committee.
800 sub
juvenile. Do you know the adult one?
Sub 4 J.
That's the adult. That's the juvenile one, correct?
Okay. Tell what let's do. Tell what let's do. It's 5 minutes till 4. Let's take the break that we were going to take right now, and let's please be back here at 5 minutes after 4, and all of our busy beavers will have all the answers that we've asked for. We'll start at 4:05. We'll go right to 4:30, and hopefully we'll get both of these bills done. So we'll be at a 10-minute recess.
Sure.
Would you do that? And actually, this one, too, would be wonderful. Those two together. Mm-hmm.
We will move out of work session on House Bill 2407 very briefly, move into work session on House Bill 2413, which is the informal disposition bill.
There are some amendments that I don't think
there are some amendments, I think, that the committee may or may not want to move.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you will recall we had a... some discussion on this bill. As the bill came to us, the bill said, I didn't want these to send them in. The bill said for 5 years or until the age of 21, I think whichever comes first, something like that. There was some discussion about whether or not the court had jurisdiction past the child's 18th birthday, which they do not. Representative Mannix had suggested language that has been attached in your packet, which would make the bill read that the informal disposition agreement shall be completed within a period not to exceed 5 years from the date that the agreement is signed by all necessary parties. The discussion at that time was that if there were some individuals who were past 18 who wanted to continue the treatment, continue to do other things, that would be an option. If there was a breach of the informal disposition contract, the juvenile court could take no action. But on the other hand, at the upfront end, if there would be some recognition that if the child and the juvenile court wanted to continue this past the 18th birthday and everyone kind of agreed to it, that would be allowable.
Thank you. I also see, committee, that we have a letter here from the Juvenile Rights Project on House Bill 2413, that's just been handed to us. And although we are in work session and have not scheduled a public hearing, I would commend the letter to the committee's review.
I think we're on.
Looking for a motion on amendments?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Edmondson.
I would move the amendments, proposed amendments to House Bill 2413, dated 2691.
Mark-1.
Representative Edmondson moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 2413. The amendments, I believe, are self-explanatory. Is there discussion? Is there objection to the -1 amendments?
Take just a minute to...
Sure.
Thank you for that time.
Okay. Committee comfortable with the proposed amendment? Any objection? So ordered.
Move the bill as amended to committee with due pass.
Representative Edmondson moves House Bill 2413 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
I do think it's important to simply say that, in consideration of all the other testimony, I'm not going to say a lot, but I did read the testimony that was just presented to us, and it doesn't take me away from the notion that we need to give some extended flexibility to these programs, especially with all the testimony that these juvenile sex offender treatment programs normally require at least 2 years, and sometimes more. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mannix. Further discussion?
Only, Mr. Chair, I mean, I'm a little bit
Bellman.
Concerned looking at this letter because we get different perspectives. We get the perspective of people who deal with offenders from the perspective of victims, and then we get the perspective of people who deal with the court system, and they don't always line up. I mean, some of what we need to do is make them line up so that they work toward policy, but I think what we want to do is make sure that they line up so that they work toward the policy that we're trying to achieve. And the point of this letter really is that, at least in Multnomah County, where probably a large number of these are processed, the district attorneys have a policy of charging and prosecuting to the maximum on sex offenses, so these aren't available for sex offenses anyway. So what it is that we're doing isn't going to hit the target, but it may have a collateral impact that we haven't really oriented toward, and we don't have, you know, that side represented here, which is all of those other juvenile offenders who right now have agreements which are for other things, which are shorter. And I really hear this comment, I mean, this resonates with me, that what we're doing is possibly creating a great deal of jeopardy for a child in view of those conditions on contracts, such as attend school regularly and obey the rules of parents. I mean, those frequently arise as problems for children. But again, those aren't the problems that we're trying to target with this package. So
Mr. Chair,
Council.
This nervous feeling that we're missing.
Council.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bauman, I just wanted to bring to your attention a letter that was also previously submitted by the Juvenile Department Directors Association. And as they stated in this, the Juvenile Department is not likely to propose an informal disposition agreement for periods of time that waste scarce treatment, counseling, and rehabilitation resources. The extension is solely discretionary, as most are within the jurisdiction of the juvenile court. So whether it's 6 months or 5 years, it's going to be a call made by the juvenile court director based on what they think is appropriate for the child. And so there is a big lump between six months and 5 years, but from their perspective, it gives them added flexibility to deal with numerous other problems other than just sex offenses.
Thank you, Council. Representative Mannix.
Actually, Council Robinson already made okay. part of my comments, so I won't say
right.
anything.
Further discussion? All right, we have a motion to send House Bill 2413 as amended to the full committee to do pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bauman? Representative Bauman?
No.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Edmondson?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
Aye.
Representative Cesari?
Aye.
Chair Clark?
Chair votes aye. Bill to the full committee. Representative Edmondson, I ask you to push that for us at the full committee. All right, we are back into work session on House Bill 2407. We have some goodies. Representative Mannix.
You asked me to work up some language to take care of the methodology in it. May I just run through a couple of proposed amendments? I move to amend House Bill 2407 in the following fashion. On page 1, lines 27 through 30, change the language of the statute so it would read, well, you scratch out the deletion of during the 5-year period. You'd start out by saying, following discharge, release on parole, or other supervised release, in other words, leave in some of the old language, comma, the person shall annually provide the person's, take out the word new, address in writing to the Oregon State Police. Again, I'll review that. Following discharge, release on parole, or other supervised release, the person shall annually provide the person's address in writing to the Oregon State Police. Then on page 2, to parallel that.
And are you deleting the language about to the parole office or probation department?
Yes.
Okay.
So that whole subsection 2 would read as I just read it.
Okay.
On page 2 of the bill, lines 9 through 12, we would change all the language to read, following discharge from probation, then jump to the next line, the person shall annually provide the person's address in writing to the Oregon State Police. I'll go over that again. That subsection 2 will be changed to read, following discharge from probation, the person shall annually provide the person's address in writing to the Oregon State Police. May I explain the motion?
Yeah, please summarize what that does for us.
The point was that, first, there's a problem with saying you have to provide your address whenever it changes because that's a nonspecific event, and there may be some lack of follow-through. There's no routine system for verification and so on and so forth. The state police, without any fiscal impact, are willing to take on the task of having this information provided to them, and they can enter it into LEDS, the Law Enforcement Data System. I've talked to Major Renfro about that. His recommendation was that we just say, require an annual report. That's a follow-up. It follows through the concept of registration, and it's easily verified by them as to whether or not the person's provided that annual verification of address. That gives them some opportunity for follow-through and deals with the problem we've heard about. Well, what about the person? You don't hear about it until they've committed another crime. Well, here, they can maintain the record, and if someone hasn't verified their address, then they have a sort of a blip on the screen to warn them that this person may be slipping out of the registration system, and they'll then take positive action to find out what's happened. That's the purpose of that change. The parole and probation people under this format still have the obligation to do the entry into LEDS. They have the obligation to follow the person during probation or during parole. And, of course, as part of that, I've confirmed this with Louise Clausen and Vern Fotz, during this process, they are continually updating the information anyway. If the parolee or probationary person is moving around, they're updating it, so you don't need to require the person to contact anyone. It's when they're released from parole or probation that you then would slip into the annual notification, and the state police can take on that role because they have a routine system for LEDS entry.
Thank you. Further discussion, comments? Reverend Bell.
I'd like to oppose the amendment, and I'll tell you why. The reason it's a nonspecific event is because we haven't made it a specific event. In other states' legislation, they say within 30 days of release, or they give a time frame to make it a specific event. And I particularly like the fact that they need to re-register when they get a new address. An individual could register and be long gone in a year's time, and I think part of the purpose of this bill to prevent additional offenses would be watered down if we only take that annual registration.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
I would accept it as a friendly amendment. Shall provide the person's new address upon a change of address And we'd have to work out the language, or annually, that it would at least be annually, but it definitely would have to happen when there was a new address. We weren't trying to scotch around that. We could take care of that language if that's the concept.
All right, so the concept is that at least annually or annually plus when the person moves.
Yes.
But we need to 30 days within, I think Representative Bell's request, 30 days within.
Representative Mason.
Well, I can really appreciate the on this, but what I see happening here is that you might want to do this. But you're basically going to have a whole series, every non-registrant, and there'll be a lot more non-registrants under this system than the old system. I believe. Non-registrations tripped at a year, not just when you moved. Every non-registrant will have committed a Class C felony. So I think the effect of this is going to be, that's why I call the respect for the effect of this is going to be is to perhaps generate a substantial number of misdemeanors and felonies. Because it's all they've got.
I believe there won't be one bill with the right relating clause on it. I support the concept. I also support Representative Bauman's suggestion, which we've not addressed in this bill. How do you work out a system for neighborhood notification? When I talked about trip levers, though, we should have something that's clearly put out and discussed in terms of this whole process, because registration is one thing. Notification to people is another. We have to consider, first of all, the whatever privacy rights still may exist for the individual involved, the criminal, and yes, they actually do have some rights out there somewhere. Yes, I said that, boy. Another consideration is civil liability. Who is liable if the notification is not made and then the victim is victimized again? There's all these trip levers that, or the neighborhood isn't advised and someone in the neighborhood is victimized. There's a lot to that I don't think in 2 days can be countenanced in this bill. This bill was a narrower focused bill about cleaning up the registration, extending it, and perfecting the process, I think, and I think we've made some good progress there. I can't see us being able to develop the much broader concept of victim or neighborhood notification in a short time.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Renfro, would you come up for just a minute, please? Representative Mason.
First of all, complimenting Representative Bell on getting a handle on one of our little tricks, which is conceptual amendments. Other committees don't do that, and it's been like catnip to us for years. And then secondly, I wonder what's the chair's pleasure on this. I don't want us to get into a quandary, and Representative Bell, I think you might want to defer.
Well, no, I appreciate the question, but heeding Representative Courtney's suggestion that we not manage our committee by the clock, this is an important bill. It's a good bill. We've made it a better bill, I believe, and there is at least a proposal that I think has some merit to it. I don't know whether it's doable or not. I have great respect for both of these gentlemen, and they have concerns. And so my tendency would be to say, let's take a deep breath and wait 48 hours, come back and look at it with some language, get some input from some folks, and then come back and deal with this issue in 48 hours, and either up or down on Representative Bell's motion. Once we have some language to look at, and at that point perhaps we could get some testimony from Major Renfro from other interested parties as to can this be done, what would it cost, potential fiscal impact. I mean, Major Renfro, unfortunately, I think we would have to look to your agency to provide the notice to victims. I don't know that the Board of Parole would be an appropriate place to do that. And so we need your input on what it would take and is it doable and all of that. I happen to think that if it is doable, and if some of the issues that Representative Mannix have raised can be put to rest, I think it's a very good idea from the standpoint of what I understand the task force is trying to get at. So I neither want to rush through this and force a vote before we have all the facts in front of us, nor do I want to delay the bill indefinitely. So that's my suggestion. If anybody feels just incredibly strongly otherwise,
Mr. Chairman,
speak your piece.
I appreciate that. Okay. I do have this neon sign in my mind. fiscal impact. Fiscal impact. I don't want this bill to go to Ways and Means.
Right, we do not want this bill to go to Ways and Means. Major Renfro, can you help us by Wednesday and with council maybe and Representative Bell thinking through a little bit about what would be involved in such a notification process?
Yes, I can, Chairman Clark.
Thank you. Council.
Just for clarification or information and then clarification, in looking at the current statute that applies to the parole board, which is 144.120 sub 7, it talks about the board of parole must attempt to notify the victim if the victim wishes to be notified, and the district attorney, and gives the district attorney some power to also notify the victim. I guess one of the questions that I would like the committee to address is, do you want that given the fact that the district attorney is going to be a party in the relief procedures, do you want that issue addressed there as well, at least conceptually? When the person's petitioning, when an individual is petitioning the court for relief, the district attorney will be there. Part of the reason I did that was to allow the committee to address the issue of whether or not you wanted to the district attorney at that point to notify the victim or victims.
Of the proposal to have the relief from registration. It seems to my initial reaction is no, and I can spell out some reasons for that, but
if you consider Representative Edmondson's comment about the 10 years, you may have some people who would have to be notified if they were being discharged. If they're in for 10 years and the duty at minimum of 10 years, you're going to have a situation where victims may or may not be notified at the same point in time. is my only point, and I can do some conceptual stuff, but if somebody's in for 10 years and then is going to petition for relief under one process, the victims would have to be notified. Under the other ones, they wouldn't have to be notified, and do you want to do that? That's all I'm on.
Why don't you draft some language that would do that, and then we can chew on that on Wednesday.
Okay. What was the numbers? The 144, 120, sub 7.
Maybe what we should do is make it available and discretionary with the sentencing judge to allow victim notification through the duration of the registration period.
Okay.
Punt.
All right. One last thing for the committee. I was just handed at the break a report from the Oregon Criminal Justice Council, Sex Offenders in Oregon, Recommendations for Change and the Reality of Available Resources. I have copies here for everyone. You might want to take them just for your files. Some interesting work that they've done, county by county, actually, in terms of treatment and that sort of thing, what's available. So thank you for a good day's work, committee. We will revisit these issues on Wednesday. And if there's nothing further to come before the committee, we are adjourned.